This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Anthony Scoma. Today on the program, Danny Quintana, president and founder of the Global High Seas Marine Preserve, discusses what must be done to prevent the ecological collapse of the Earth's oceans caused by global overfishing and environmental degradation due to pollution and human interference. The scope and severity of this crisis cannot be overstated. Compared to pre-industrial levels, at least 90% of large predator fish have been killed off. Half of the ocean's wildlife has been lost in the last 40 years, and, on average, humans kill approximately 200,000 sharks each day. If these trends are to continue, the majority of the Earth's fisheries will collapse by 2048, an existential threat to biodiversity and to billions of people who rely on fisheries as their major or primary food source. Addressing these significant threats to life in and around our oceans, Danny Quintana lays out the goal of preventing disaster through education, the Sustainable Seafood Cities campaign, and by amending the Law of the Seas Treaty to prohibit certain fishing practices until our oceans can rebound. He also discusses the role landlocked areas like Salt Lake City can play in saving our oceans. This forum was recorded on January 15, 2020. Here is Danny Quintana.
I have to tell you, it's quite an honor to be here 40 years later, and all of a sudden I blink my eyes and, holy cow, where did 40 years of my life go by? But it did, and we're here, and fortunately, we're still here. We didn't blow up the world. So I want all of you that are under 50 to put your hands like this for just a minute. I have a gift for you. $23 trillion national debt, that's yours. The collapse of the fisheries, that's yours. Global warming, climate change, that's yours. The dead zones off every river on every continent on the planet because of industrial pollution, that's yours. Overpopulation, that's yours. The depletion of the aquifers, that's yours. Nuclear proliferation, that's yours. And I want all of you to say, Danny, we'd like to thank your generation for not blowing up the world. So come on, give me some love. politics can make a difference. And when I was a Hinckley Institute intern, I had the good fortune, along with my colleague here, Dave Buehler, of we interned for State Senator Francis Farley. And I started studying about nuclear weapons when I was 10 years old, and it's not a really good idea to learn how these things work when you're that young, because you're not going to have very many friends in school, and by the time you get to college, you're going to be a little bit paranoid. So at that time, the United States government was planning on building a first strike weapon system because there were people in Washington that actually believed a nuclear war was winnable. I had a two-year-old child, and I didn't agree with that analysis. I thought that they maybe were a little bit off. And some of the estimates were that acceptable American casualties would be between 10 and 20 million if we attacked first, and then the resulting Russian retaliation would mean that we would only suffer 10 to 20 million casualties. I explained to State Senator Francis Farley and other senators how these weapon systems worked and why this was such a clear and present danger to humanity. And we drafted the MX resolution that was passed 28-1 by the Utah Senate, and it worked. We stopped that weapon system from being built. But my experience with the Hinckley Institute, what that did was it made it so it gave me the confidence to go on a completely different path. I think if I wouldn't have been a Hinckley Institute intern, and if I wouldn't have been a Rockefeller Minority intern, I don't know what my life would have been like, but it has certainly taken me all over the world, and it's been one wild ride. I've seen a young man with his legs blown off crawling on a piece of cardboard in Kabul, Afghanistan, and the devastation that took place there. We did a wheelchair distribution in 2004, immediately after the American government threw out probably the most despicable regime that has ever ruled a nation, the Taliban. And, when you deliver wheelchairs to the poorest people on the planet and you come back to the United States, you get an appreciation for what peace and stability and law can provide. I had the good fortune when I was an undergrad of studying under this super genius, Dr. Francis Warmoth, and I don't know if there's any former Warmoth graduates here, but he really would explain the dynamics of politics and what happens in the real world, and as well as the history behind it. So later on, I was able to successfully litigate against the Department of Defense on the nerve gas case. The Department of Defense had an accident at Dugway Proving Grounds where an F-104 had the valve open and nerve agent VX went into the atmosphere. And once again, it was only through the grace of God that we didn't kill 250,000 people, because VX has the viscosity of oil. And so the cloud was in the upper atmosphere. It drifted over Salt Lake and then drifted back. And then when it was in Skull Valley, it rained and it killed over 6,000 sheep as well as a whole host of other things. And some of the sheep were illegally buried on my client at that time's land, the Skull Valley Goshutes. And we sued the Department of Defense and we put together the model program to clean up all Indian reservations nationally. But my legal exploits aside, such as they are, what my travel all over the world did is it gave me a profound understanding of the environmental problems this planet is facing. And those problems are just staggering. When I was doing the research and the work on my last book, Space and Ocean Exploration, The Alternative to the Nuclear, to the arms race, to the military-industrial complex. As I was doing the research, it was like, this couldn't be right. You know, I was reading Dr. Daniel Pauly's work. He's the world's foremost authority on fisheries. And I was reading, the Scripps Oceanography Institute, Woods, the studies, the actual studies, and the science, the data. And it was half the wildlife is gone. That couldn't possibly be right. And then I look at another study. 90% of the large predator fish have been killed off. 90%. That's like going to the Serengeti, and there's no lions, there's no hyenas, there's no predators, because they've all been killed off. And I look at other studies, and it's like we're killing 200,000 sharks each day. And this isn't news. You know, this is not out there. Some bimbo having an affair is news. Somebody lying to the press again is news. But the destruction of the wildlife in the oceans is not news. Why is that? Well, we travel a lot. And when we travel a lot for not only our organization, but because we enjoy traveling. And when you're by the ocean, and as you look out at the ocean, you can't see what's going on underneath. You can't see the devastation that is taking place that has to be stopped, because if it is not stopped, your children are not going to have wildlife in the oceans and they're not going to have seafood. What we have happening is basically a perfect storm. We have massive population growth coupled with improvements in technology and the history of change. From 1800 to 1900, the population of the planet went from 1 billion to 2 billion. From 1900 to 1970, it went to 4 billion. Today, the estimates are the population's at 7.56 billion. I think it's closer to 8 billion. And we're increasing the planet's population by 1 million people every 4 days. So, if the entire planet adopts America's consumption habits, obviously we will have total ecological destruction and an apocalypse. But that doesn't have to happen. What I want all of you to think about is there are answers to these problems. Because the problems are the trawlers. You have these huge industrial trawlers that are out there. These ships are so big that they are not fishing. What they are doing is they are emptying out the oceans. Those nets on those trawlers are so big, they can hold two 747s. They have long lines that go out for 50 miles with tens of thousands of hooks. And then the fish that they catch, if it's not the targeted species, what they do is they just basically destroy them. So about 40% of the fish that are caught in the ocean are just wasted. And we're talking about creatures that have been around for thousands of years. And as you can see from these nets, they are just massive. Okay, why is this happening? Well, it's happening because what we have in the United States today and in the developed world is we have food choice. My grandparents did not have food choice. What my grandparents had was a small subsistence farm in northern New Mexico near Taos, and they grew their own food, grew their cattle and their sheep and their pigs and their chickens, and they ate what was in front of them. But today, we have food choice, and seafood is a food choice that we can make, and we make that at the expense of the oceans. Now, the reason we are doing this lecture here in Salt Lake City is the interior cities of the developed world are causing complete devastation of the planet. The interior cities are importing seafood from all over the world so that people can have food choice. Well, choose something else. quit killing the wildlife. And not only are we emptying out the oceans, but because of food choice and because of the improvement in the standard of living in Asia, we are killing 200,000 sharks each day for shark fin soup. Now, those of us that have gone swimming with the sharks and seen the majestic beauty of these incredible animals, you know, you don't want to kill them. My gosh, they're curious, they're interesting. And I would encourage all of you to get in the shark cage and go and swim and see them. And if you're really, really curious, then put on a dive suit and go and swim with them, because we're killing about 200,000 sharks each day, yet sharks kill less than 10 people a year. So, and the shark fins, it's disgusting. You know, it has no nutritional value. And all of the toxins of the sharks, because sharks are like the white blood cells of the oceans, they clean the oceans of dead and dying animals, and all of the toxins end up in the shark fins. So there's no nutritional value. But shark fin soup was a luxury of the royalty, of the upper class. And Lord knows it is so important to be rich, because if you can't be rich, then you can't show off and just explain to people just how you're so superior to everyone else. Well, only royalty could basically eat shark fin soup. But now that it's accessible, because you have 300 million people in China that make over $50,000 a year, it's become something as a status symbol. Well, that status symbol needs to change. The Global High Seas Marine Preserve is going to be working with various people in Asia, and we're going to try to substitute shark fin soup for bison, and we're working with the Native American community to get so that they eat bison, which is really healthy and it's sustainable, as the alternative to shark fin soup. It's going to be extremely expensive, so if people want to show off, oh yeah, I had bison and it cost me a fortune. So there are alternatives. There are things that we can do that will work. But what we're doing is clearly not working. Less than 5% of the oceans are protected. The 5% that's protected, the 4.5% that's protected, are protected by what are called marine preserves. They're like nature parks. You go to Yellowstone, you can't go over there with your hunting rifle and start killing the bison and the elk and everything else. There's rules and regulations on how that works. And you can't just go and dump your garbage over in Yellowstone. That's just not how it works. So nature preserves, whether they're on land or in the oceans, work. When we were at the Florida Keys, it is, if you get a chance, you definitely got to go to the Florida Keys to the marine preserve there. It is intact. The coral reefs are intact. They are just beautiful. And you can go fishing. You go with a rod and a reel, and that's fishing. And I would encourage all of you to really, really visit the marine preserves and, you know, support ecotourism, because when you do that, you're creating jobs that are sustainable. But if you go further north from Florida Keys and you go up to Deerfield, you go up to Boca Raton, to the piers there, and you go fishing, you're going to catch a sunburn. You might get a bite or two, or you might even get a little tiny fish, but you're not going to catch your day's catch. The fish today are getting smaller and smaller and smaller in the catches. It used to be when people went fishing 50, 100 years ago, the fish were really large. Well, that's not happening anymore, and the reason it's not happening anymore is because as these industrial trawlers are out there emptying the oceans so that people can have food choice, they're fishing lower and lower on the ecological scale so that you're getting smaller and smaller fish. And now they're taking the breeder stocks, they're taking the juveniles, and those are being caught before they have a chance to reproduce. Ideally, it would be great if we could just close the oceans off for 10 years. And if we could just do that single thing, then the fish would start to immediately recover, because I don't know whether the fish are Catholic or not, but I'll tell you, they can reproduce in a heartbeat. And if you leave them alone, you'll have plenty and plenty of fish. Marine preserves do that. Wherever you have marine preserves, then what happens is those end up being like a bank where the fish build up, and then they support the surrounding communities. But with less than 5% of the oceans protected, of course 50% of the wildlife's gone. Of course 90% of the wildlife's gone. If it's not protected, then anybody can have access to it, and you have the wild, wild west. So what we have to do is we have to change the economic model. Now, 90% of the seafood that comes into the United States and the European Union is from other parts of the world, because those fisheries are so fished out that they can't support the demand for seafood. Well, I would encourage you to not buy seafood from other parts of the world. Last night I went over to one of the grocery stores, and you can go to any grocery store. And as you look at the cooked shrimp, if you look at where it's from, some of it is from India, some of it's from Indonesia, some of it's from Thailand, and surprisingly enough, if you have a mix like this, some of it's from China. Well, less than 1% of the seafood that is sold at supermarkets is inspected. And one of the things I would encourage all of you to do is do a research project and go to all of the grocery stores and start testing this seafood for toxins. Because you had Fukushima, and all those radionuclides went right into the Pacific Ocean, and guess what? We are not testing throughout the United States and throughout the world on all of the toxins. Instead, the seafood continues to be sold. Those trawlers that are emptying out the oceans will transfer their catch from that a trawler that's probably fishing illegally to another trawler, and then they relabel it, and then they sell it before the European Union and in the United States. So when you buy seafood, you really don't know if it was caught sustainably or not. And the reason you don't know is because they're not going to tell you. There's no law out on the high seas. There's suggestions. We suggest you not kill all the bluefin tuna. Well, bluefin tuna is now on the very edge of extinction, yet it's still served in restaurants in Las Vegas, which infuriates me. I stopped in Las Vegas on my way back from San Diego while I was out there recently, and sure enough, at one of the major restaurants, I look on their menu and it's bluefin tuna, you know, and I talked with the manager and it's like, what are you guys doing? You know, this is an incredible species. I mean, it is the ultimate predator in the ocean. It's a beautiful animal. And they're killing it so that people can have food choice. And I can just tell you, because I love eating seafood, there's not that much difference in eating sushi from sustainable caught tuna versus tuna that is not sustainably caught. And even along the coast, in San Diego, I stopped at one of our favorite restaurants over in Coronado, and they're serving farm-raised salmon. So if you look at what is sustainable and what is not sustainable, there's pretend sustainability, which is something that my crew and I talk about constantly, and what is sustainable. Farm-raised salmon, whether it's from Canada, the Northwest, or from Norway, is the last animal that you should eat coming out of the oceans. All of you can go online and look at YouTube videos, and you can see that the farm-raised salmon are in these pens. And what you do with farm-raised salmon is you destroy two fisheries. You take anchovies from Peru, because salmon are a predator, you fly them in from Peru, and you feed them to a salmon farm in Canada on the Fraser River, and the salmon, they have to give them antibiotics, and the waste streams from there contaminate those rivers with the wild stocks, and then when they get loose, they breed with the wild stocks, so you weaken the entire species. So farm-raised salmon is something that should just be banned worldwide. Unfortunately, it's not. Why? There's pressure from certain interest groups that buy off politicians, and next thing you know, you're eating farm-raised salmon. And that restaurant over in Coronado was serving farm-raised salmon. And then they were serving fish from the Mediterranean. So I called the manager over, and I go, do you guys realize the damage you're doing to the environment by flying in fish from the Mediterranean, which is nearly fished out? You're flying it all the way to San Diego so that somebody can have food choice. But people don't know these things. They are not aware of them, and that's why they do them. And that's why we are doing our global public education campaign. We are here to provide information that we want all of you to share on your social media page and share it with your family and your friends and become educated on this issue.
That's Danny Quintana, president and founder of the Global High Seas Marine Preserve. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. For podcasts, more local shows, and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to keep local programming alive on KCPW. Welcome back to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Anthony Scoma. Today, Danny Quintana, president and founder of the Global High Seas Marine Preserve, discusses the imminent threat of ecological collapse in our oceans due to overfishing and a changing climate. Here is Danny Quintana.
There's pretend sustainability, what Sky Worthen, our vice president, calls greenwashing, because that's exactly what it is. And there's sustainability. We got to go with what's sustainable. There's, because of the transshipments and pirate fishing, you really don't know what you're getting. You don't know if the tuna that's processed in China and being sold in the United States is sustainable, whether it's caught properly or not. But our recommendation is your first choice if you want to have a sustainable lifestyle, which is what we would recommend, is don't eat fish at all. If you live away from the oceans, just don't eat fish. Don't eat the wildlife. If you don't eat the wildlife, then these companies are not going to sell it, and you're not going to have the large carbon footprint because your diet is what will make it that you lower the carbon footprint. I mean, you can go with a plant-based diet, which a lot of my friends and some family members choose, and it's a much, much healthier diet. There's plenty of video online that explains a plant-based diet and why it's healthier and why that's a good choice. If you're not going to go with a plant-based diet, then, and if you're not going to go and you have this insatiable demand to eat seafood, then just buy American-caught seafood. The United States has what's called the Magnuson-Stevens Fisheries Conservation Act. And that is one of the most important federal laws that has ever been passed. What that did is it basically saved the fishing industry. and it saved fisheries because the United States has probably the most stringent environmental laws when it comes to fishing in the world. If you buy American seafood, it will be traceable, it will be sustainable, and it will be healthy. And it is inspected. So what that also will do if you buy American seafood is it supports these small family fishing companies. Now, we're losing thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of family farms. So if you eat locally, then what will happen is if you eat locally, you'll support the family farms that are near Salt Lake, and those will stay alive. But when we were in Hawaii here recently, my son and I went over to the fish auction over at Pier 38 in Oahu, and it was incredible. Every fish that is caught is tagged so they know when it was caught, where it was caught, how it was caught, and who caught it. And it's brought to the auction house. It's immediately sold that day. It goes to restaurants, and it is really, really well done. If everybody in the world fished the way Hawaiian fishermen fish and our friends up in Alaska fish, we wouldn't have a fisheries crisis. By 2048, the projections are that all of the fisheries worldwide will collapse and all the wildlife in the oceans will pretty well be gone. And I can tell you here, 40 years later, that's not a long time. You know, it's like, holy cow, 40 years of my life's gone by. I'm back here at the Hinckley Institute, and instead of coffee and politics, we're having pizza and politics. And you're looking at it, it's like, 40 years? That's a long time. No, 40 years is not a long time. And I think it's going to happen earlier than that, because as you get economic development in the developing world, and that economic development takes off, then developing countries are also going to go with food choice. And what are they going to do? They're going to reach out into the ocean and start killing more of the fish. It's not working. What we have to do is we've got to change the food consumption habits. So that's why we put together this global public education campaign. And this global public education campaign depends on you. Every one of you in this room, if you are concerned about the future of the wildlife on land and in the oceans, you have to change your diet. You're going to have to go with a sustainable food diet. You don't cut down the rainforest in Brazil if you don't buy beef that's grown by Brazilian cattle ranchers. It's really that simple. You know, if you look at it, usually the simplest answer is the best. And usually the simplest answer is the right one. And look at the things we do with agriculture. Agriculture is one of the biggest causes of climate change and carbon dioxide releases. You got to look at that entire food chain. And you're at a university, you're here to think, and you're here to learn. You can study all of these issues on your own on what is nutrition, what is proper nutrition, and how you can help. Where every one of you can help is share our website on your social media page, get involved with us. We're going to ask each of you to go into a high school, a junior high, and we're going to ask each of you to one hour for 1 year to teach a class on what is happening to the wildlife in the oceans. The six major media companies that control 80% of what Americans see, read, and hear, they are not going to make this issue known. They don't care. Those large foundations that are out there, you have all of these nonprofit foundations that are out there, most of these are just tax scams. Basically, you have really rich individuals, and they create a foundation, and they pretend they're doing something. Well, they're not. The obvious results are there. Half the wildlife in the oceans would not be gone, and 90% of the predator fish wouldn't be gone, and we wouldn't be killing 200,000 sharks each day if the people who own the planet were actually doing something. But you can care. Each of you can think about this. Well, it doesn't matter what the people the top one half of 1% of the multi-billionaires do. What matters is what you do in your own life that will make a difference. And yes, you can make a difference, because I was where you were 40 years ago. And I can tell you that politics does work. You can get involved, and one of the biggest things you can do is you can vote. The public employees that provide all kinds of accolades and pat themselves on the back constantly that are called politicians, they are your employees. And yes, there are term limits. Those are called elections. You can fire them. If you don't like the job your politicians are doing, vote them out of office. 95% of politicians are reelected. This isn't communist Russia. This isn't communist Cuba. Here, you can vote, and you can vote them out. And yeah, there is a lot of money that goes into politics, but none of that money can buy your vote if you don't let it. We need to make the environment the central issue of the 2020 election, because your life is important, and your children's lives are important. And if you really care about this planet, you will get involved and you will tell the people that are running for office that the environment matters. The environment is something that we don't have another planet that we can go to, that we can somehow colonize, and we can escape from the environmental problems here. This is it. This planet is the planet where it's make it or break it. And we're at a historic time in history. You have the perfect ecological storm that is happening right before your eyes, and all of you are missing it if you don't pay attention to what's going on. Because this is no longer death by a thousand cuts. The collapse of the fisheries is taking place right now. The killing of 200,000 sharks each day is happening each and every single day. Several species of sharks now are extinct. You're talking about predators that are 400 million years old. And our long-term goal is to amend the Law of the Seas Treaty and create a global high seas marine preserve. What that will do is it will take all of the oceans and protect all of it. What it will do is, instead of 4.5% of the oceans being protected, we change international law, create a law of the, amend the Law of the Seas Treaty, and create a global high seas marine preserve where the wildlife and humans are on an even playing field. The ocean is at least 70% of the surface area of our small planet. And to give you an idea of how small this planet is, we are 22 hours away from any major city on Earth. That is a very, very short time frame. But look at the carbon footprint that it takes to import Patagonian toothfish, which has been renamed Chilean sea bass, all the way from Chile to Salt Lake. That's a lot of jet fuel. Or orange roughage from New Zealand, which is now being caught as juveniles. They take 30 years to reproduce. And if you look at where seafood is coming from all over the world, and you're asking yourself, well, why are we doing this? How come no one is doing anything about it? Well, no one is doing anything about it because you are the ones that are going to do something about it. Don't expect other people to solve environmental problems. The environmental problems facing the planet are going to be solved by every one of you. You can't depend on other people to solve the problems facing our planet. Those problems are solved each and every day with what you do, with what you buy, because your wallet is your vote. If you choose not to buy plastic water bottles, and then they can't get into the oceans. Because I'll tell you, the major corporations that are making water bottles, they could care less about the environment. The companies that are making all these plastic bags, they don't care. But the thing is, you can care. Because when you put this plastic into the oceans, well, what happens is the sea life can't differentiate between a plastic bag and a jellyfish. And when they swallow one of these plastic bags, they die. That's why you see videos all the time on YouTube and in social media of all of these animals that have died. Well, of course they've died. Take one of those water bottles and swallow the cap and see whether or not you end up in the emergency room, because it's not going to go through your digestive system, and it's not going to go through the digestive system of a seal or a porpoise or a dolphin or a whale. We have got to stop dumping garbage into the oceans. We can do cleanup of the oceans all day, all night, and next week, but that's like cleaning up your kitchen floor, but you're forgetting to turn the water off because the faucet's busted and you're still getting water out there. We've got to stop the dumping that's going into the oceans. Peter Markle, our social media director, he and his friends went to Mexico and they cleaned a beach because they saw that beach was just absolutely devastated. Well, the way we can stop dumping garbage into the oceans is by amending the Law of the Seas Treaty and making all of the oceans off limits to industrial commercial fishing, to shark finning, to ocean dumping. Our cruise ships used to just dump garbage overboard. They didn't care. And enough people like yourselves got involved and said, no, you can't do this. Well, the developing world is still dumping garbage into the oceans. What you have in the oceans, in the high seas, is what's called the tragedy of the commons. If nobody owns, if no one has complete ownership or resource, and everybody owns that resource, then what happens is you're going to try to cut down the very last tree because you don't want your competitor or your neighbor to cut the last tree. You're going to try to kill the last elk because you don't want your neighbor or your competitor to kill the last elk or the last bison or the last fish. And the tragedy of the commons, because no one owns the high seas and because they're not protected, it's the wild, wild west out there. It's complete lawlessness. You have not only piracy, but you also have slaves on board some of those fishing vessels, where literally they will go to a poor country and they'll tell people, you know, you're going to be on this fishing vessel, and then they become slaves to those ship owners. But what's happening out on the high seas is not discussed, and it's not known. Well, you can make a difference. How can you make a difference? You go with sustainable foods. And that's why what we did is, I was on the Mayor's Environmental Sustainability Council, and we drafted a resolution for Salt Lake City to make it the nation's first sustainable food city. All of you have a copy of that resolution, and I'd encourage all of you to contact the mayor's office and tell her you support doing this. If you go with sustainable food and a sustainable diet, not only will you lower the carbon footprint of your own life, you'll lower the carbon footprint of your community, of your family, of your city. And ultimately, as this spreads all over the world, this idea takes off, we're going to start to make an impact. Because an impact starts when you make a decision in your own life that, okay, this is enough. This has to stop. That's how the Vietnam War stopped. That's how my friends and I stopped the MX weapon system from being built. And that's how we're going to stop the destruction of the wildlife in the oceans. It's going to stop with everything that you do individually. Because when you look in the mirror and you go, wait a second, this is going to have an impact on the rainforest in Brazil. Wait, this is going to have an impact on the fisheries off the coast of Peru. It's a small planet. I'll bet every single one of you have been to another country, and I'll bet every one of you have friends or family in other countries. And as we do this, and as we become aware, and we share this message, and the message is, half the wildlife in the oceans is gone. 90% of the predator fish are gone. We're killing 200,000 sharks each day. These trawlers are emptying, and there is hope. The hope is we change the law, we change the rules, and we protect all of the oceans, not 4.5%, but all of the oceans. Now, in order to do that, you're going to have to elect politicians that will want to amend the Law of the Seas Treaty. But there's a big problem here. The United States refuses to ratify the Law of the Seas Treaty. We can't get that through Congress because there are special interests that give money to politicians that do not want the Law of the Seas Treaty adopted and ratified by the U.S. We are a signatory, but we're not a party. That has to change. because it's your future that these politicians are messing with. Long term, it's going to take about 20 years to get the Law of the Seas Treaty amended and create a global high seas marine preserve. That's just reality. We got to get a lot of countries on board. Short term, you change your diet, get Salt Lake City to adopt a sustainable food resolution. And the reason we're doing it as a resolution is for the simple fact that you ask people to do something. You don't go with a baseball bat and tell them you have to do this. You ask them politely. You tell them, look, you change your diet, you eat locally, you eat sustainably, then you're going to improve a whole host of things. That's why it's a resolution. We're not asking that this be adopted as a law and that it be mandatory. You know, people have enough common sense that if you're given the right data, you will make the right decision. We trust that all of you will do this, and we think that it will work, and we know that you can make a difference by getting involved. So on behalf of the Global High Seas Marine Preserve, I'd like to thank all of you for being here.
That's Danny Quintana, president and founder of the Global High Seas Marine Preserve. You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be right back. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Anthony Scoma. In this final segment, we take questions from the audience of faculty and students. Once more, here is president and founder of the Global High Seas Marine Preserve, Danny Quintana.
Lawrence David Bueller. How can we plug in to this Global High Seas Initiative? And what are the best ways to get involved directly in your effort?
Well, it's not my, his question is how can we get involved in this effort? Well, it's not my effort, it's our effort. There's a lot of organizations out there that are working diligently to change what's going on. And find an organization that you like, join our organization, teach a class. If each of you will teach a class and we get an army of teachers where you go and pick out a high school or a junior college or a college and you go and you do a presentation like this, we'll provide the data for you and the resources, and you just go and you explain to people, this is what's going on, the message will start to spread. Go on social media and like our Facebook page and our website and share it. Buy coffee from us. That helps. We're going to be selling a whole host of products on our website so that we can have continued funding. Volunteer. You know, we need this to spread all over the world. And everything starts with what you do. And, you know, change your diet. You have a healthy diet? Boy, it's a big, big deal. And when you have a healthy diet, and you share that message with your family and friends, that lowers your carbon footprint right there, right then, and you start to make a change not only in your own life, but in the lives of your family and your friends and those around you.
Hi. So my question is, what is your response to those who believe that environmental sustainability efforts and changing the laws infringe on their rights to choose?
Okay, the question is restraining environmental efforts, does it infringe on a person's personal rights to choose? Well, that's why we have laws. We have laws so that we can have a society that works for everybody. And I think that food choice has just gotten completely, completely out of hand. I think at a certain point, you have to restrain people's rights to choose. If I believe I can go racing down the freeway at 120 miles an hour, or if I believe I can just go at any speed limit I want through a school zone, and that's my right to choose, well, it's not my right to endanger the lives of other creatures out there. I want all of you to understand one very basic concept, okay? Plants and animals are persons. They are not people. Those redwood trees that are 2,000 years old, Their roots go through the forest on the floor. They communicate with each other. These animals that are out there, I mean, many of you have pets. They each have their own personalities. Okay, they're not people, but they're persons. Our next event that we're going to be doing later this year is, do plants and animals have souls? Well, if plants and animals have souls, then you can't just indiscriminately slaughter them. So, yes, it does infringe on people's rights to choose, but our rights to choose are limited because we live in a global village. We all live together. Now, we don't have to like each other, and we probably won't. There's people I just simply can't stand that I've met from other countries, and I'm there thinking, oh my gosh, I'm glad I don't live there. But we have to live together, and part of living together in a global village is we have to respect the wildlife and the plants that are out there. I mean, part of this is also the Christian Judeo view of reality, where man is at the center of the universe and the plants and the animals are there to be harvested by us. I think we need to adopt a more indigenous way of life where the plants and the animals are part of creation. My next book is Copernicus Was Mistaken, and the premise of that book is that the Earth is the center of the universe. The reason I believe the Earth is the center of the universe is those of you that study astronomy know that in our solar system, there is no complex life of any kind. I mean, we haven't even found bacteria on other planets. And that's just in our solar system. The nearest star, Proxima Centauri, is 20 trillion miles away. That's 4.2 light years. That is so far away that we can't get there with current technology. So, yes, the Earth is the center of our universe because this is what we have and this is what we have to take care of. Yes.
Is this on? In addressing your question, and I'm part of the board of directors of our Saving the Oceans, in addressing your question of a right to choose, it's like our freedom of speech. We have freedom of speech, but it's not absolute. It's not absolute from the standpoint that we do not have a right to yell fire in a crowded theater. We do not have freedom of speech when it comes to endangering the lives or property of another. So, though we have freedom of expression, it's not absolute. So is our freedom of choice as to what Danny's been talking about here today. We don't have, it's not absolute from the standpoint that we can jeopardize what will happen to our children, to you, for example, to you. You will see it. Our oceans are so dire right now. Global warming is so important, but it affects our oceans as well. It affects our oceans. We have about a 20-year lifespan in the oceans. If our oceans die, we die. One of every five breaths you take is because of our oceans. The things Danny's been talking about, when those trawlers go through and sweep through the oceans, they also destroy the phytoplankton, which produces the oxygen which we take. So these, in addition to overfishing them, we also destroy what helps us to live and breathe. And our oceans make up 2/3 of our planet, so it's important from that standpoint as well.
Yes.
Okay. In many countries, particularly the Indian Ocean and Southeast Asia, food from the ocean is a very large part of their diet, a very large part of what is available to them in any way, shape, or form as far as protein. Are there any efforts included in this? Because you mentioned some of the large trawlers and things are coming from Micronesia and the various countries out there. Is there any effort to teach them methods of either fish farming, shrimp farming, whatever, or other sustainable processes to give them the food that they need that they'll be losing when the trawlers go away?
you hit on a very, very important point. His question is there other methods and other efforts out there to provide protein for these nations that depend on the oceans? Between 1 and 3 billion people, the figures aren't exact on it because the research on that is all over the place, but over 1 billion people depend on the oceans for protein. Well, you can substitute the protein with other things, but the thing is, if you think we have immigration problems now, imagine when the fisheries collapse and people have to migrate because they don't have access to protein. So your point is spot on, and there are efforts. There's nations, the Chinese grow a lot of tilapia and a lot of carp, fish I really don't want to eat. But here locally, we have trout hatcheries, and there are efforts being made on land. There's a really innovative company in San Diego that I ran into where they're taking fish cells and they're growing the fillets. And that's a game changer. And many of you are in the hard sciences, so some of you will be involved in creating new ways to have a plant-based diets or to have a food for the planet. You know, because what you have to do is you have to look at what is happening today as this crisis creates an opportunity. It creates an opportunity for change. Many of you will be working on clean transportation systems. So, the efforts can be made, but those efforts are going to have to be made with research that's being done at this university and other universities, and not only on sustainability, but in better food production, cleaner food production, with less nitrates, with less toxins, less poisons that get into the entire food stream. And that's going to happen all over the world. I mean, it's not hopeless. It's far from hopeless. When I was your age, I was worried whether or not we were going to survive. And through the grace of God, we didn't blow up the planet. And yeah, you guys are welcome. We didn't blow up the planet, you know. So we at least did that. But we did leave your generation with a mess. And it's our obligation, being in our 50s, 60s, 70s, it's our obligation to help your generation clean up this mess. Look at the industries that can be created by just cleaning up the garbage that's in the ocean, by helping other nations. Instead of demonizing them, how about we go and we help them to stop dumping garbage into the oceans? How about we go with a sustainability economy instead of a throwaway economy? So you got to look at this crisis of the environment as an opportunity to change the planet. Go with a new transportation system with electric vehicles. And yes, I 100% support nuclear power. I'm a big advocate of nuclear power because I believe that nuclear power is the one way that we can immediately lower carbon dioxide releases, carbon monoxide releases worldwide. And it's a technology that can be used for good, not just for evil. I've been studying about nuclear weapons and nuclear power since I was really, really young, and I can tell you that we can solve these problems. But these problems come with the innovation that you're going to create, with your ideas that you're going to take out there into the marketplace, with what you try to do to effectuate change. So, this can work. Yes?
We have time for one more question. So I was wondering, as we move towards a more sustainable food industry, what efforts are being taken to make that more accessible to lower income levels and places all over the world that may not have access to it because it is like it's more expensive to do and therefore is more expensive for people to buy?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a question that affects all of us. It's like, can I afford to be a vegetarian? And yes, you can. You can actually go with a plant-based diet. You can go with a sustainable diet. You just have to shop right, and you have to take the subsidies out of agriculture. The reason that we're able to mass produce the garbage that pretends to be food that is served to the public is American corporations and corporations all over the world get tax subsidies from their governments. we overproduce corn. And then the way we do it, we'll overproduce corn. We have corn fructose in just about everything. And then we'll feed the corn to the beef. And then the beef, in turn, is sold to the public. But this is where public education campaigns work, because as you look at smoking, smoking went down as people learned, oh, wait a second, this will cause lung cancer and heart disease, and I'll die. Beef consumption is going down, and the reason beef consumption is going down is people are realizing what industrial farming is doing to the planet. So yeah, we can, we clearly can afford to have a sustainable food diet. And that works by working with your legislators and tell your legislature, look, you're not gonna tax food. That's ridiculous. I mean, you're taxing food. People have to eat. Just don't do it. So it happens with you getting involved in politics and telling your politicians what to do.
Okay, that concludes our forum. Please join me in thanking Mr. Quintana for this informative and interesting forum. Thank you.
If you'd like to hear another Hinckley Forum, you can find them on our website, kcpw.org, or on the Hinckley Institute podcast. This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Anthony Scoma, your host and producer of this program. As always, thanks for listening.